For the fans, by the fans, this is the Non-League Football Show, and I'm Tim Fuel, back with another weekly look at the world of non-league football. A bumper show this week. First up, an experienced manager in possibly the tightest promotion battle across the pyramid. Where's Paul Housey is no stranger to playoff pressures, but in a season of some clubs with 5 games per week, he's got just 3 games on 3 separate Saturdays left to play in a division when any club from 6 could still pip the title. Talking about experience, following our love of highlighting the great work that's done by so many off the field and the many jobs that can entail, we speak again to an old friend of the show, Adam Etheridge. From volunteer to full-time administrator, he's now overseeing the off-the-field work at Corn FC and has a multitude of hats and a multitude of stories about the wonders and magic of non-league to tell. Rounding it all up in a bumper week of news too is the non-league paper's John Couch. There's that FA VAR semi-final second leg, there's final movers and shakers in the National League, there's fairness for fans, and some managerial moves all in the mix too. So, time to sit back, relax, and let's get matters underway. So, after our discussions last week about fixture pile-up, let's start this week with a manager who's got, 3 Saturdays to end the season and sees just 1 game on each of those. So, no midweeks, his side is 2nd in the table. Would he rather that than 4 games per week? It's an interesting debate. Let's welcome back to the Non-League Football Show, manager at Ware FC, Mr. Paul Housey. Welcome, Paul.
Morning. Hi, Tim. How are you? You well?
I am well. Thank you very much. So what about it then? We hear many a manager complaining about too much football, and we know you've always been a passionate manager, a lover of the game. Is 3 games, 1 on each of the next 3 Saturdays, perhaps too light for somebody who likes to be busy?
I think the difference between us and teams like in our league, People's Road FC, Bedford, Welling Garden City, and teams like Barton, is that we've got the 4G, so we've only had, believe it or not, 1 game called off this season, and that was against Kidlington last year. So for me, I'd rather be how I am now with only 3 games, because even having 2 games last Bank Holiday weekend, Saturday, Monday, the boys still felt it. And then they've got, they're feeling their legs, they've got to have stretches. I don't envy these boys that have got to play Saturday, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. I do believe that especially in our league, Tuesday night games should have been played earlier on in the season. We had a bad winter. We've had a lot of rain, haven't we? So that what's caused it. So for me, I like it like this because it gives my players time to recover. You've got to feel for these. I was listening on the national radio this morning about players are getting tired in the prem. In the top level. Because they're playing too many games. But obviously that's a lot higher than us. But these boys have got to go to work, they have to go to work on a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. They've got to get time off, if they've got to go a long journey. So I don't envy them. I do think that can be a bit of a hiccup for you, because, you might be playing, one of them teams might be playing us tonight, but we've only played Saturday, and then we might have a Thursday game. So for us, it wouldn't be a trouble. I don't think it'd be a problem, but It is a nightmare for a manager to try and, especially if you've got, boys who are a little bit older, you're just early 30s, they do feel it. And 4 times a week, on a heavy pitch is a tough ask for players. So I'm happy how it is. I'm happy I'm Saturday. I can't see Saturday being called off. The following Saturday won't be called off. So I can't see me playing any Tuesday night games unless we make the playoffs.
Yeah. I mean, it's so tight at the top of the Southern League Central Division that you're in. We're speaking Thursday evening, just before tabletoppers Biggleswade Town are taking on the Welling Garden City. And Biggleswade Town, they're 1 point clear of you, 2 games in hand. Welling won on Tuesday. They're on the same games as Biggleswade Town, but 6 points behind them. And currently, even being that, it shows how tight it is. They're outside the playoffs, but 6 points behind.
Yeah, of course.
If they win tonight, though, Welling, it gets even tighter at the top. Is this the tightest running you've ever had?
I think it's the strangest season I've had.
You've had some strange seasons as well.
Pardon?
You've had some strange seasons as well, going through COVID and all that.
Yeah, I've had some strange seasons. You're right, some COVID, etc., etc. But anyway, I've got to let that one go. I'm doing my best to let COVID season go. But no, it's been a strange season as far as that everyone's been beating everyone in this league. You know, we would lose to the bottom teams and then go and beat the top teams. What's helped me the late is, you know, I think we've won something like six or seven games in the last eight games or something. Welling Garden City have been on that run. In between that, Bedford have had a bit of a bad run, you know, and Biggles Wade played Bedford. They go and beat each other. So you can't call it. A bit like the Premiership this year. People ain't calling it yet or they don't know what to do. I ain't calling it. You know, at the moment, I see Biggles Wade Town as the favourites. They're in the driving seat. If they win tonight, I think that pretty much might cement it. But you just don't know. They might win tonight and lose Saturday. So for us, it's just about winning every game. And that's all I need because I'll be honest with you, 3 months ago, 2 months ago, did I see us making playoffs? I think I didn't, I'll be honest. I put my hand on my heart. I didn't see it happening. But again, this is like last season, we've had a great run to the end of the season. So we've got games in hand over Dunstable, and we've got a game in hand over Waltham Abbey. But we've got to make sure we win them games. But we've got Biggles Wade and Dunstable in the last two games.
Well, that was what I was going to say. I mean, I guess not even the playoffs are assured yet. It's that tight. And you've only got three games, but tough ones too. You've got Aylesbury United this Saturday. I guess they're pretty much safe for a mid-table finish, you think. But then, as you say, that following Saturday, AFC Dunstable, who currently sit third behind you. And then the last game of the season, you go to Biggleswade Town. That could yet still be a final day title decider.
Well, geez, how amazing would that be? And, you know, but listen, for me, it's one game at a time. I know Aylesbury are tough. They've always been good against us. They're a bit of a jinx side for us, as I say. You know, they beat us this season at our place after being 2-0 down, I think it was. And they beat us last year at theirs and the year before. So it's a tough game. It's a tough pitch over at Chesham. So, you know, but I treat that the same as any other game. I thought the Kidlington game could have been a bit of a sticky one. We lost to them 4 weeks ago when we went and beat them on Saturday. So, Kings Langley we beat and Tame, I thought, could be a bit of a tricky one because at the end of the day, these boys are fighting for their survival, you know, Tames and Kidlington and Aylesbury. I think Aylesbury probably have a monitor. Probably it should be all clear now. But, you know, it will be a tough game. Be a tough, tough game. So, you know, we'll take that game, take nothing for granted, and the boys know that they need to win that game. You know, if we're going to put pressure on the top team, then we need to win our next three games. And who knows what might happen. And I don't know.
Because it's so tight, it's always very tight. It's either you or it's just the division. I don't know what that is. But I know you've got a couple of longer journeys, haven't you? But there's a lot of locality, you know, local games in that league. Does that then make it tighter? Because the players, coaches know each other, and there's a bit more of a strategy type game.
Yeah, I think that with our local games, you know, you've got not so many as there was probably last year with Romania who actually played at Trezent and then Harlow. But you know, the Hartford, you know, one of the biggest derbies in non-league football, in my opinion, you know, Hartford, you've only got to look at the two crowds that turned up for both them games for Step Four. So that's always a big derby, you know, and, you know, even Waltham Abbey, you know, that local derby. So, you know, you do get to know people. Yeah, you know, the managers, you know, Welling Garden City, you know, that people class that as a local derby. So, of course, everyone, you know, I've always said people want to beat Ware, and we, you know, we've put ourselves up there. The last 6 years I've been at Ware, I've put myself up there to be shot down. So, and I have to keep doing that, you know, we'll keep trying to improve. But every game's tough in this league sometimes, you know, even like AFC Dunstable, you know, your Bedford. You mean, look at us, go back, when we lost 7-1 at Bedford, We lost 4-0 against Biggles ADFC a few weeks later. Who thought that we would be in playoffs positions, you know, a couple of months, three months later down the line. But I will say, full credit to my players, you know, the team, you know, I had someone come the other day, their support, you know, I don't really recognise many of your players from last season. My team's completely changed. Mm. Completely changed, you know, and we got Lou still there, Fred still there, Joe still there, little Freddie still there, and Theo come back. But it's like I've had to rebuild during the season, you know, and that's hard, you know. You like normally got your team and it's settled. The last 4 or 5 years, my team's been settled. If you look at my teams, they've been much and much the same players over the last 3 or 4 years, give or take. You know, and it is, you know, I've had injuries, you know. I lose Dan Rumans through ACL. I lose Lou Rose, who's my skipper, has been my skipper for 13 years for his, you know, his personal, you know, his cancer, fighting cancer. So, and it was massively great to see him back on Saturday, and I brought him on. You know, and that was just, you know, just to see his face and mm-hmm. his family was there and to see the fans applauding him on, and, you know, so that's great. So I've had a massive change around, and that's been hard. One of my, I would say this has been one of my hardest seasons, other than probably the first season as a manager. This has probably been one of my hardest ones,
I was going to ask that, because, I mean, possibly, you're one of the longest-serving managers around. You've been there since, 2018 now. I mean, managers don't last that long nowadays, do they?
It's funny, really, because I was probably 17, I think, I became manager, but... Don't forget, I was the manager in 2009 and goalkeeping coach back then. So, you know, this club...
You know the club well, yeah.
Part of me. It's part of me, you know. And it's nice. It's a nice recognition that you are, you know. People do go through managers quite a bit. And it's just nice that, you know, we've got that family sort of thing, and community is brilliant, you know. You know, the chairman and his wife, you know, I'll get on extremely well with. And, you know... We all know when it's time to hang it up, but at the moment I'm enjoying it sometimes. But so it is very stressful. But I've learned not to be, as you get older, you know. I see some of these young managers now. I think, that was me 10 years ago, you know. And
well, again, that's something I've got written down here, that the last time we spoke, I think you admitted to me that you'd mellowed as you got older as a manager. And I think I know, even talking to you, even swapping messages, that you're certainly more pragmatic in situations where it might have used to have got to you. But I'm sure that in these next three games, if we put a blood pressure monitor test on you for these next three Saturdays, the Paul Housey passion is probably like to raise a few graphs, isn't it?
Well, as per our little chat before the interview, I'm being backed by these two hernias at the moment, and I can't really be as bad as I am. Now, you talk about me being mellow, Tim. Bedford at home, we went 2-0 down. And I was in the stands for that game, and I was just sitting with a couple of my pals who'd come over and watched the game. And I look at it and I'm thinking, God, I can't see us getting back. And I did get, there'd be times I'd be straight down there screaming. And, you know, don't get you nowhere. Just let them play now. I understand. It took me a while, but yeah, I still throw my toys out of the pram. You know, we beat, my players will tell you, we beat Tame 3-1 a couple of weeks ago on a Saturday. Didn't stop me bollocking them and on the pitch in front of everyone, because they'd done things that I didn't agree with. And they've got to learn that, you know, when you 3-1 up, you don't go no. You just sit back and take the result, take the 3 points. That's all that matters. So sometimes you've still got to instill some little bit of discipline. And I just, you know, there's been times this year that I have, you know, Kempston away, you know, off. Well, it was awful that day, but not as like that. But I mean, I was just so frustrated at being 2-0 up and to lose 4-2. So, yeah, listen, I have mellowed. It is. I don't know. Maybe it's all these interviews I'm doing making me mellow. And I've got a bit of my best behaviour, you know. You know. So it is. You know. I do see some people, and you know. Listen, I ain't gonna lie. I still have my moments. Of course I do. But it wouldn't be me if I'm not, you know, my brother would tell you. So it wouldn't be me. But it's funny, really, because he's a manager now and he's probably worse than me. And he was a referee.
Oh, when the tables are turned, I think all the truth comes out.
I love it. He tells me he got a yellow card. He says to me, got a yellow card. I said, what for? He said, I ain't got a clue who these refs are. They ain't got a clue. I'm like, please stop it.
There's a whole separate podcast to be had there, isn't there? Before I let you go.
Oh, my God. We'd be brilliant on a podcast.
That's a side chat to have, that one, isn't it? No, it was just before I let you go, I was just going to say, player of contention. I don't think there's little doubt that you should get there. Potential to title two, if everything does align. But step two appears to be a different beast every year. The step three football appears to be a different beast every year. I'm sure you're probably staying in contact with what's up at that next level, but can Ware compete if they get promoted?
I think that if you want me to be completely honest, yeah, and this is me being honest to anyone who wants to listen to this about, I've been at step three. I've won step three as an assistant manager and I've been in step two. So I know the difference between step four, step three, step two. But that is back in 2012, okay? And I think the football non-league, the different, it's a lot different today than it was then. So can we compete? Look at the last two seasons, yeah? We lose playoff final. Bedford, North Lee go up, both get relegated. Last season, Berkhamsted, Didcot, both get relegated. So were they in a good place to be staying up, getting promoted? I don't know. I think Bedford may have been in a good place, but I don't know what their budget is and I don't know what they had at the time. So what you do need is you need the right calibre of players, you need the right manager, and you will need, to stay in the league, a decent budget. You would need that. That is the foremost, once you go up the leagues and you've got to compete, you've got to start competing at the higher level, and you know it is, go up the ladders, you need more money because you've got to buy that better player. So could we compete? I believe we could if the chairman gave me the right budget and I got the right calibre of players in, 100% we'll compete because, we've been there or thereabouts for the last three, four, five seasons. I believe we could, but it is a big step. You're going up to the next level. So that money has to be generated and you have to keep that money in. And at the moment, a lot of players, it seems to be about money, money, money. So, which is a bit disappointing at times, but I think we can. I think we're in a great place because the club's where it needs to be, and it's only getting better and better. You've got 40 youth teams at that football club. Wow. Pitches used every day of the week. Soccer schools in the school holidays, it's training on it every night. So the bar and the clubhouse, they have functions. So, yeah, the supporters have built up. It's got bigger and bigger, it's a great place to be at. So it's a great club and full credit to the owners who have got it where it needs to be. Mm. Obviously I've done my bit, but they're the ones that have to put their hands in their pocket and do the football club up and get the bar right. And people want to hire a nice football club out with a nice hall for their wedding and their birthday parties, et cetera, et cetera. So I believe that we are in a good position and it will come down to the right calibre of players. You attract the right calibre of players. The club's a grubby, lovely place to play at, will be at. It's a decent ground. It will come final down to money, I suppose.
Unfortunately, money makes the world go round and it makes it stop if you haven't got it as well, isn't it? Paul Hassey, I know we could talk forever, but I need you to rest. You've only got three more games to play before and you need to rest that hernia. Always great to get you on. Great to talk to you. Best of luck in these last three games and we'll speak to you soon.
Thanks very much, Tim. Speak soon. Take care.
Well, in recent weeks, we've been celebrating those who keep non-league ticking. Those often in the background, but oh, so important they are. So it's a great opportunity for me to welcome back another old friend of the show and someone somewhat of a stalwart of non-league to talk about his club in the race for back-to-back playoff promotions. But also, I hope to talk a little bit about himself and non-league. Let's see what he says. It's a pleasure to welcome back to the Non-League Football Show, Secretary at Corn FC, Adam Etheridge. Welcome, Adam.
How you doing, Tim? Nice to be back on the show. I'm with a different team every time I come on here.
I didn't like to say that. A bit of background. I think we probably first came across each other when you were, secretary at Nuneaton Borough? Or you were there for, many, many years, long-serving secretary. You then had stints at Anstey Nomads, Melton Town, among others. Now Corn, multiple hats over the years as well. I think I've dealt with you as an admin, as a media reporter, as a photographer. I mean, you just love football. You love non-league football and you actually love a lot of the red tape bits we actually all hate but need doing.
Well, I think you've got to be a bit of an odd one to get involved, haven't you, really? Certainly to end up with the number of jobs that you end up with. I mean, you know what non-league football is like. It's you go in to do one thing and something pops up and no one knows how to do it. So someone's got to learn how to do it. And then you end up with that job for the rest of your life, basically. And that's just how it's worked out. So I went to Nuneaton Borough. It was 2017 and I was there for, I had one job and that was to do the team sheet at away games. And 2 years later, it's a full-time job for me. Doing a bit of everything. I mean, the general manager, because Nuneaton's had plenty of crisis over the years, over the years. And I ended up as secretary, effectively general manager as well, so doing orders for the bar and things like that. I have no clue what I'm doing. I never run a bar before, but it's just what ends up happening, isn't it? That's non-league football for you.
Well, that's it, isn't it? You say that no one knows how to do this job, but it normally comes across your desk and you don't know how to do it either. But it's either that, it's sink or swim, isn't it, in non-league?
Yeah, I think the great thing about non-league is that there's a community as well. So I know if I've been asked to do something, I've never done it before. There's someone in non-league football that's done it. And I know I can call yourself, or there are plenty of other people that I've dealt with over the years that I can call if I've got a problem and I can talk to them about it. I still talk to obviously people at Melbourne and still, I used to get calls from the Nathan still earlier in the season saying, have you come across this before? Do you know what to do? And I think it's just that community is the only word for it, where we will all help each other out, because at the end of the day, we're all trying to achieve the same thing, aren't we? And it's for the love of non-league football.
It's for the love of non-league football, but I think you love football, but you love sport as well. And do I recall a passion for American football and maybe an important part of your path towards this football administration process?
Well, that is where I started as a volunteer in sport. So again, I mean, I went down to my local club, Coventry Jets, in 2004, and I wanted to be a player. And I realised after about three training sessions that I was not going to be a player. So I began doing statistics. By 2008, again, I ended up as acting general manager because our general manager quit. And I mean, it was quite high level to a regard, because we were playing what was effectively Champions League of European American football. So it's organising travel for 30 guys to go over to Oslo for an American football match. It's wild, and I've got a lot of experiences from that. And I arrogantly thought that, I've done all of this. So when a job comes up in football, I can't want to do that. But it turns out that what you've experienced in American football is not necessarily that useful for football on a lot of games. But at the same time, it's still a lot of the things I learned volunteering in American football are things that I still use now.
And the fact that we've benefited now at non-league football, but you've benefited as well. You created a career. I mean, yeah. Similarly, my wife disagrees that mine's a career that I've developed in non-league football. But I mean, when you first got involved as a volunteer, did you ever believe that several years down the line you'd still be creating this pathway for yourself?
No, my partner's the same. She still refers to this as a hobby. But it's basically been a full-time job for the last 6 years or so. Admittedly, over several different clubs. And I don't tend to last anywhere more than about 2 years, and then I'm on to the next challenge. But I'm beginning to wonder if maybe I'm a problem, Tim. No one could put up with me for more than 2 years.
You're the Warnock of football administration, maybe. Maybe that's how we should pitch you out. But hopefully you're going to be there.
I'm going to take that as a compliment. It was intended.
Hopefully you're Vic Corn for a long while. Yeah, I mean, one of the great things we do get to experience when we're involved with non-league football clubs is the difference you can make, not just to the club, to the players, to the fans, but also the local community. And I know that, Corn, you've been doing just that with a local homeless food project as well.
Yeah, I mean, I can't take any credit for it myself, but we've got some... There are the settlers, basically. They came to myself and the chairman shortly before Christmas and said, we'd like to do something to help the homeless in Loughborough, which is our closest town. And it's got quite a problem with homelessness. I'd say and they said, we'd like to use the kitchen to prepare meals and take them to a charity in Loughborough called Falcon Services. And they will then distribute them. We just want to know, are you happy for us to use the kitchen? Which, of course, we were. Mm. And what they managed to do just after Christmas, I think it was Christmas week, they were in here for, I don't know, 7 or 8 hours preparing all of the vegetables and everything, getting everything put together and then cooking everything and then transporting it all into Loughborough. And they'd funded all of this themselves. And we're probably talking the best part of £200 every time they do this. And obviously the gratitude from the Falcon Services and the fact that he's been able to help so many people. We realised that when we received an email about the Trident Community Fund, which is something that Pitching In and the Northern Prem and the Southern League and the Isthmian, I should know these things.
The step three, step four sponsors pitching in. They just sort of set it up December 2020, I think the first ones were launched. Over 100 community grants been given out funding projects like this, which is, I guess, good for the projects they serve, but also the people they help and also the clubs that they run through.
Yeah, I mean, it's great now that... The volunteers are doing this every month. The last Friday of every month, they come in here, they spend a bit of time together preparing and these meals and then taking them over to Loughborough to be distributed. And yeah, I mean, we're talking 80 meals every time, so that we know that homeless people are getting at least one decent meal, which, you know, is scratching the surface, isn't it? But the fact that we're able to do that now, and the Trident Community Fund have been great. They've given us very generous grants that it's taken the burden off our own volunteers. So it's only their time. It's not paying it for it themselves.
Yeah, and just to show the variation of what being involved in a football club is all about, every day really is different. Maybe unblocking the toilets is a regular occurrence, but that's another story. I understand your off-season job at Corn is going to be overseeing a branding relaunch and a new badge. Tell us why and tell us more.
Well, one of the things that we're struggling with is finding sponsors. And I know, obviously, it's difficult at any club, but a lot of the pushback that we've had from sponsors when we've approached is that they haven't wanted to be involved with the club because of the branding, the badge. And I don't know how familiar you are with our badge, but it doesn't mention football. It hasn't got a football on it. It doesn't look like a football badge. And it depicts Fox Hunting graphically. Mm-hmm. I mean, Fox Hunting's been illegal since, what, the late 90s? And we haven't moved with the times. And I don't agree with Fox Hunting. I never have. So one of the things that we've looked to do to modernise the club a bit is to change that badge. So we have now got the design set and ready to go. We tried to do something that obviously Horn is synonymous with Horn Hunt, so that was why it was on the badge, because it represented the village in that way. But I think that's quite a negative connotation for the village now. So we've tried to do something that still represents the village, but also gives an idea of the history of the football club as well. And this is our centenary year. So one of the things that was quite important, I think, for that badge was to show, you know, we've been going since 1924. And this is just a village club now, playing at step four, and hopefully, who knows, step three. And I'm quite proud of the fact that this club has been here for 100 years. And I think it's something that needs to be on that badge. That badge needs to show that this is a football club. And another thing that we've done is we're bringing in a lot of junior teams, merged with a local junior setup, so that we can create a player pathway. Because it's important as custodians of this club that we leave it in as good a shape as we found it, if not better, and hopefully it will be better. But we think the new branding, the new badge, is really going to help us in the community and bringing in some much needed sponsorship.
Yeah, and as you say, yeah, the junior side, academies, that's what modern football's all about. You've got a 3G pitch as well. We're probably looking at an even better investment than ever before this season.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just looking out the window now at the first team of training on half the pitch. We've got a group of veterans that used to play for the first team on the other half. And Ashby Ivanhoe, who have had problems with their pitch this season. They played their 12th game here last night. Bristol United have used the pitch. Anstey Nomads have had a pitch here. Because you'll see it. As soon as you drive out of the village of Bourne, you're heading towards Leicester, the roads down either side, you'll see as soon as those fields are flooded, you know, get ready for the calls that are going to be coming in. People looking pitches at the weekend. And sometimes it's chaos. We're trying to get three games on in a day. It's quite hectic. Hopefully, we're coming to the end of the wetter period now. And I mean, it's a lovely evening out there tonight. So hopefully, teams can get games on at their own grounds. Because it's a massive loss for teams to lose out on the that secondary revenue behind the bar and the. I mean, it's fantastic for us, don't get me wrong. But you want to be able to see clubs thrive.
And I guess that's, helping other clubs like that, it goes back to that first part of the conversation about the non-league family, and also the fact that, I mean, every day's a learning day as well, isn't it, in football? And it's alongside all of that, there's football to be played as well. And as I said, Corn successful in those interleague playoffs last term, actually beating this weekend's FA VAR semi-finals, Great Wakering Rovers. This year, we're just outside the playoffs, but you've got a game in hand in the Northern Premier Midlands Division. You had a great FA Trophy run too. It really does sound like the club's in a great place.
Yeah, it's been a remarkable season really, with that starting off with the trophy run, then obviously we've been in and around the playoffs for most of the season, and we had a bit of a hiccup because our management team, which when you're successful, people are going to come looking at them, so they've left us and gone to Kettering, and they've done a great job there, and they've guaranteed their safety for next season, but we've then had to try and maintain the good work that they'd started. You need to keep going with that and have been able to do that. And two, as part of the coaching staff, Hank Carney, he's stepped up to the manager with Green, who was one of the coaches that was already here. So we've got a bit of continuity. We managed to retain most of the playing staff. We did lose a couple of players, but we've had other players step in. They filled that role. We kept that momentum going. We did lose at the weekend to the league leaders. But we're still confident that we've got a very good chance of getting in the playoffs. And I think once you're in there, you know as well as anyone, it's a lottery. We know that we can score goals. So I think we've got a reasonable chance. if we can get in.
But what about you behind the scenes, though? You know, promotion's lovely. That's the reason we're involved, is for all this success and, you know, all the great days and the great feelings that brings. But it's also, I always find there's a little bit of trepidation about promotion and the things that come with it. You know, that particularly on back-to-back promotions, so many additional things that come into the mix, and you know, you've probably under-resourced in everything you do.
Yeah, it's that lack of sponsorship really does mean that we do struggle financially to be able to maintain what we're doing. We had that boost from having other games on here that's really helped us. But one of the advantages that we have, this ground was basically already set up for Step 4 football, because the club were at Step 4 decade ago, and the ground's been well maintained. So when it came to ground grading this year, we had virtually we've looked at what it would take for Step 3 next year, and it's a minimal amount of work that we think we can do in the summer anyway, which is we've got to add two more benches for the area, and we've got to put two gates in so that we can segregate the ground. So in that regard, we're already well set up off the pitch, I think, for Step 3 football. We've got a good team of volunteers here. I've experienced Step 2 and Step 3 football before, so it's not going to come as a... I don't think it's going to come as a great shock. It's just whether we can afford to do it or not. That's the big question.
And what about those volunteers? Because obviously we've benefited from... you coming on board as a volunteer, Corn, and now experience all the benefits of that as well. But what about the next segment of volunteers? It's getting harder and harder to recruit people.
It is. What are the benefits that we've found, though, of the merger with our junior section, is that there are a lot of people there that once they become part of this club, they become more invested. We've had them down a few games, and they've been mascots. They've had games on the pitch before the first team. And those parents want to give something back to the club, apart from obviously what they do financially. In terms of subs, they're very keen to be involved. And we hope that... I mean, the problem is you don't want to find yourself reliant on too few people. But They're very keen, and they're very community focused, and they've got a lovely atmosphere within the club of everyone gets on great, and everyone wants to pull in the same direction. They're putting on a race night here on Saturday night, for example, to help fundraise for the club. So they're already active and involved in that regard. And I do think we'll benefit greatly by the club growing naturally.
Well, we look forward to looking out for more success for the club, both for yourself and for the club. I'm sure I should probably let you go, because you've probably got other things to organise and plan and everything like that. But it's been great to get you back on the Non-League Football Show. Adam Etheridge, best of luck for the rest of the season.
Lovely. Thanks for having me on, Tim.
Time once again then to head on over to Non-League Paper Towers. Welcome back to the Non-League Football Show. Executive editor at the Non-League Paper, Mr. John Couch. Welcome back, John.
Hi, Tim. How are you?
Good, good, good. It's lots to discuss. Let's start with a catch-up. Non-League Finals Day. Last weekend, and into the trophy final, we saw Solihull, Moors and Gateshead. The latter there, of course, for the second year running. Always a big game for anybody that reaches the FA Trophy final, but particularly for these two sides that have been sort of heralded as great non-league clubs in recent seasons, their rise and their achievements, and it's great that both of them will be at Wembley come the end of the season.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, as you say, two famous clubs, but different route, isn't it? I mean, Gateshead obviously steeped in history. They reached the final last year, as you mentioned, and were very unlucky in the end not to beat Halifax. But they've always taken the trophy very seriously of Gateshead. They haven't again this year, and they've been tremendous and fully deserved of their place at Wembley and Solly Old Moors. I mean, it's their first trophy final. Furthest they got in the competition by quite some way. I was at the club on Tuesday night for their game against Ebbsfleet, and it's something that they're all very, very proud of. And I tell you what, they look very, very good as well. Excellent side. And Andy Wings put together a very competitive team, and who are hitting form at just the right time. And I think it's all set to be a tremendous final. You've got two teams who are not only playing for an FA trophy, but also playing for a promotion to the Football League for the first time as well. And it's all set to be an absolute classic. I spoke to Solihull's Mark Beck, who knows all about playing at Wembley, albeit in COVID times, in front of no fans. But he helped Harrogate do it. Do the Wembley double as such in the FA Trophy and promotion, and it could well be that either of these teams are both eyeing the same thing. Obviously, there's a lot of football to be played, but you know, with the FA Trophy in the bag now, they've put that to bed, put it to one side, and concentrating on the playoffs. But either way, their season's going to end on a big high.
Yeah, and this weekend we do have one of the FA Vars semi-finals also still to play. We saw Romford bag their final spot last week, but this weekend we have the second leg of Great Wakering Rovers against Worcester City. Worcester leading 1-0 from the first leg. And you just said, yeah, we've just said it's a big day for those that reach the FA Trophy final. Is it an even bigger day for those clubs that reach the FA Vars final?
I think it probably is as well, because the chances of getting to a final are even smaller. There's so many clubs, as you know, all very, very similar, all very, very similar in ability, all going head to head on a one off occasion for a prize that these players and fans would basically only sort of dream of. And you know, and there's a lot of football we've played. I mean, the Vars, I think, starts in the last week of September. I think they go through sort of seven or eight rounds. You know, it's a lot of football. It's high intense stuff. The last two rounds of the competition, they drive to far-flung places that they could never imagine to play in, and play against teams who that they've never seen before, and you know, have absolutely no idea of how they play or anything like that. So it's a huge occasion for these clubs. The first City on Saturday, big crowd of I think 3,500 fans at Six Way Stadium, big venue again for a big game. Not a cagey affair, so I understand. But they're coming down to Wessex, and it's perfectly poised, isn't it? I think White Raker are expecting a nice big crowd, expecting crowd as well, and Worcester City will certainly bring their army of fans. It's all set to be an absolute classic. Obviously, if Great Raker can do it and get to meet their league rivals Romford in the final, that'll be great for the county of Essex, and no doubt they'll be making Wembley and in their droves. But Worcester City are, you know, they've just celebrated promotion back to step four this week. Plenty to play for them. They've been excellent all season, and they'll probably start off as slight favourites. But as you say, all to play for, and it should be an absolute cracker.
Yeah, best of luck to both of those at the weekend. No details yet for non-league finals day tickets, but I'd expect probably next week some sort of announcement. All we can say is put, what, Saturday the 11th of May into your diary. The Sunday before, of course, is now the National League playoff final at Wembley. And as you mentioned, both Solihull Moors and Gateshead, who are in the trophy final, I'll be hoping that they might be in that one, of course, as well. Solihull Moors, currently fourth, just two league games left for Solihull. The others around them, we've got 3-5 to play at the top of the National League there before the normal season ends. But Solihull, big game this weekend, travelling third place. Bromley, who've already bagged their place in the playoffs. Of course, the wonderful thing about the playoffs and the National League playoffs in particular, that the highest finish possible really does give an advantage.
Very much so, yes. Second and third place, I spoke to them at Solihull, and it's something that they're aware of. They know they're going to have to go to Bromley on Saturday and beat them, but they did in the FA Trophy semi-final last week at the very same place. So it's something that that they are very, very capable of doing. I went on Tuesday night, and I was really, really impressed with the way they played. They've struck a formula which is just hit form at just the right time. They brought in the lad Torrey Shade on the right wing. He was excellent, as was Joe Sabara, who's just come back from injury. And the two of them are really sort of leading the front line. They're strong at the back too. They look really, really good, but there's plenty of teams who have hit the ground running at the moment as well. Halifax Town, they've hit form at just the right time as well. They've crept into that last spot. Their next two games are at Accrington Stanley, so it'll be interesting to see whether that sort of derails them. And obviously we mentioned Gateshead too. They score goals for fun on their day, and they're going to be a tough nut to crack. Bromley and Barnsley, you say, already there, but it's Altrincham as well. Don't forget Altrincham, who probably got one of the best players in the National League at the moment in Chris Conn-Clarke and Aldershot, my old down at Aldershot. Don't write them off. They've been there or thereabouts all season, been written off, but they're still there, and they'll be desperate for a chance to get back in that football league again.
Yeah, Aldershot, that's still home. They might sneak back into those playoffs, and we do usually see one every year, although probably I think it's maybe a step too far for Southend with that 10-point deduction. Again, just proving such a big penalty. But I guess the attention probably this weekend is maybe going to be at the bottom of the table. Again, clubs have still got varying between two and four games to play. It's all very tight, although becoming a dwindling number fighting it out there. I think Maidenhead has secured their status this week. There was a big win for Boreham Wood last weekend over Wilson that prior to... Yeah, we're speaking Thursday afternoon, Thursday evening, Thursday night games still to be played that... The Boreham Wood and Wilstown level on points, two goals apart. That win for Boreham Wood important, and also saw the end of the short spell at Stones for David Noble in charge. He's yet to do a full year in management, I think. You made the move to Stones from St Albans after less than a year there, and I'm sure he'll be back in the dugout somewhere before long. But Sam Cox stepping in as interim manager. I know he's a bit of a Wildstone legend, but it's a big task in his first boss to take on to try and keep the Stones in the National League.
Yes, yeah, a huge task. Huge task. I think, unfortunately, it didn't quite work for David Noble. It was a big risk of an appointment, I think. Although at the time, Wildstone were in the top half of the table and looking good. David Noble obviously done a excellent job in a very short space of time just down the road at St Albans, but it just didn't quite work out for him, did it? I think two wins in 17 and then the next, and all of a sudden they find themselves being sucked into that relegation battle, a bit like Boreham Wood. I mean, it's just not happened for them either. They've been playoff playoff challengers for the last two or three seasons, and you know, but all of a sudden they've been sucked in as well. I think it was seven defeats on the spin, and that's all the end of Luke Garrard, who leaves at the end of the season, and but all of a sudden you've got a big shootout between two sort of National League, very well established National League clubs. Bournemouth had an excellent win over Wiltshire on Saturday. They really, really needed that, and that's given them a fillip really for the last three or four games of the season. And it really is a battle to the end, isn't it? Which I think we expected really from the start. Dorking Wanderers have got a huge game tonight as well. That they're another team who have been sucked into it, and I've got it all to do. I think they're probably going to need to win their last three games really just to stand a chance. But it really is sort of dog eat dog down there. Kidderminster Harriers, and they've only got the two games left. Eastleigh at home on Saturday. That's a must win for Phil Brown's side. But I think it's going to go right to the wire, as we knew it could be. We probably would be, but it really isn't a poor side in the National League this year, and I think every single one of them are capable of clawing their way out of it. They've all got the quality to do it. It's just whether they can just find that last little bit of genius and last little bit of togetherness to get them over the line. But it's certainly going to go right to the wire again.
And I hope that's what we're talking about again this time next week and in the coming weeks again, John. Because as you say, we've had some great football across steps one and step two this season. And, you know, I don't want to dwell too much on them, but there are two big talking points this week involved in the teams in the National League. Tuesday night postponement, Gateshead against Aldershot Town. Lots he said, she said type stuff on social media. It doesn't help the situation, doesn't help non-league. The game was called off minutes before kickoff eventually, but only after lots of hard work by the ground staff. Once again, the weather's, yeah, beyond everybody's control. I think there was more rain than expected in the afternoon there. Effectively, decision for the referee to make on health and safety grounds, as we discussed before. Whatever the opinions of the two sides, and then equally livening up the message boards, the social platforms this week, the decision from the National League to hand the points to Slough Town from their abandoned game against Bath City. Decision, of course, based on the fact that Bath appeared to refuse to play on despite the medical emergency that was there having been dealt with. That originally led to the pausing of the match. It looks like there's probably more to come in terms of FA charges as well. So it was an interesting change to previous precedents from the National League. I hope it doesn't change. Yeah, normally an abandoned game would end up being replayed. Obviously, we're already up against it with fixtures and also the scenario here. Hopefully, it won't create a new precedent because that might create even further complications next season. But yeah, these decisions maybe just need to be decided on a case-by-case basis as it was here. And I just wanted to make a point that really slinging of abuse, whatever happened there, isn't helping anybody. It certainly isn't helping non-league. Doesn't sort of paint us in a good light. You know, on a positive note, at least we have had that decision before we enter the last few weeks of the season with the potential impact on those National South playoffs.
Yes, that's certainly a positive note. We've been here before, haven't we? Where there's always been one situation or one decision that's outstanding. Once all the balls have been kicked, and you know, we've had situations before where we're left in limbo. Hopefully, that doesn't happen this year. Thankfully, they managed to sort the Slough and Bath decision out. I personally think the right decision was made. I take the point. Unfortunately, I think it's more of a social media problem and a society problem. It's never nice, but it happens all level of the games. Unfortunately, passions are running high. There's a lot to play for. On the Slough decision, I think the right decision was made. I think with the way that the situation went, I obviously I wasn't there. It's difficult to grasp exactly what happened, but from what I hear, it did appear that Bath refused to play. Slough had 1,600, the biggest crowd of the season there, and they were leading 4-0 at one point. It was 4-2, I think, at the time of the abandonment, which makes you think that Bath were still in the game. But you know, unfortunately, that game couldn't be played, and Slough ended up with the points, which makes the playoff race in the National League South all the more interesting. And and then obviously we get this Gateshead order shot 4A, which I think you can understand the arguments of both of both sides. Personally speaking, I think it's something that's it's something that the FA or the leagues really need to look at, because there's been so many instances this season where abandonment or games have been postponed far too late in the day. It's obviously every case is different, but it's happened time and time again, and ultimately it's the fans. It's the fans who are left with wasted trips. I don't know what can be done. There's various options, I think, available to them, but I think sanctions need to be put in place for next season to ensure that this doesn't happen again, because this season has been an absolute nightmare for it. And I have to say, ultimately, fans are being left shortchanged, and that's what the game's all about. So hopefully they can sort out the Gateshead all the shot situation. I think Gateshead have got five games to play in the space of about 8 or 9 days. It looks as though it'll probably be played next Thursday, which is not ideal for all the shot. They've got to go to Gateshead on the Thursday and then Dagenham on the Saturday, and that's not ideal for a team chasing the playoffs. So ultimately, none of them really getting out of it. It was just a really unfortunate situation. The weather has absolutely killed us this year. But you know, sort of going back to my earlier point, I think we need to sit down at some point and try to put something in place it's limited.
Because we spoke a lot about the fixture pile-up and postponements and all that last week, but I don't think we actually arrived at any solution, because it is a mess. And as we discussed last week, when we're in the middle of this mess, it's probably not the best time to be trying to look for solutions. We need to be looking for solutions before we get in the mess, because, you know, it's a bit like we're trying to bail out the boat with a bucket with holes in at the moment. So it's, you know, there's so many potential issues here that all need to be addressed together. You know, I think I even suggested last week that we need some sort of a committee to oversee this and sort of look at it as some sort of like independent report as to how we solve it. You know, this week we've seen more games off across the pyramid, weather not really improving. It's hardly a spring shirt weather, is it? We've got more clubs moving to those temporary ground chairs so they can play their remaining games on 3G pitches to get games in. I see Badshot Lee have gone to Slough Town. Horndean are going to be playing at Chichester City, Potters Bar Town at Haringey Borough, just to name a few. And you mentioned that the switch for FC Halifax as well, playing games at Accrington Stanley too, just trying to get these games in. And we've still got a number of leagues with over, 40 games to play in just a matter of weeks. Clubs like, United County Step 6 side Selston, I think they've got 7 matches to play in 14 days after another postponement this week. They're 19th out of 21, so they're in a relegation battle themselves. They face 3 fellow relegation battlers and a playoff hopeful in those remaining games. So all of those games that they've got to play are important in the context of both the club and the league. It's a mess. It needs to be sorted. I just think that we need someone to, you know, maybe higher up the chain, just to step up and say, look, we can't do much about it this season, but already over the summer, we're dealing with it this way.
Yeah, I could agree more. You know, whether that be sort of league chiefs around a table or commission some sort of, as you say, something needs to be done because I mean, yes, I think it's the fifth wettest winter we've ever had, and you know, no one for seriously, it probably won't be as bad next year. Hopefully, it's not. But I agree with you. I think in cases of such a deluge, you know, if you look down in the in the southwest, yes. I mean, the clubs down there have had an absolute nightmare, and you know, we got a case of Truro having to go 200 miles to go and play their games at Gloucester. It's unheard of, and as you say,
But you touched upon it there earlier, John, because
it could never happen again.
We had that time during COVID where fans couldn't go to football, and everybody's saying, "Oh, fans are so important to football. We can't have football without fans." Blah blah blah. And it's actually the fans that are being impacted probably more than anybody else by all these problems, not knowing where they're going to be playing football. You mentioned Truro having to go to Gloucester City. We had the game the other week where it was the venue was changed on the morning of the game. You know, I appreciate the players, it's their job. Yeah, whether it's their main job or not, it's their job to get there. But for a fan who's having to leave his own job to get to the game on time to make it there, when that venue may be 50, 60, 70, 80, even further miles away, it becomes an impossible task.
Yeah, it certainly does. And this is why I think we really need to sit down. You can't have a change of venue on the day of a game. It's not fair for anyone. It's got absolutely no thought of the fans whatsoever. It's literally just a case of getting the game played and dishing out the points accordingly. That's not the spirit of non-league football. Not for me. This needs sorting out. I think Truro played a game at Plymouth Parkway quite randomly this week, having already told the fans that they were going to go to Gloucester. I mean, those supporters must be beside themselves and probably giving up the ghost or the chances of seeing Truro at all this season. Poor Truro, they've had an absolute nightmare run of games. I think they've still got to. Still got five left to play. It seems like they've been playing every night at the moment. They've got Yeovil Town tonight, and obviously Yeovil can win the National League South with victory there. So it's never ending. But I agree with you. There's nothing we can do now. Just see the season out. But that's when we really need to sit down and decide, put a precedent in place, and decide what we're going to do. Because if it is as bad as this. This time next year, we really can't be going down this route. We've had a lot of letters from non-league paper towers this week from irate fans who are fed up of having to move venues. Obviously, Halifax moving to Accrington Stanley's gone down like a lead balloon in some areas of Yorkshire. Halifax's pitch is an absolute quagmire. I saw pictures of it this week. Obviously, they share with the town's rugby team as well. Still, things like that that really need addressing sort of once and for all.
Yeah, and also we need consistency as well. And we know we had this FA sort of deadline imposed before, but we've seen one of those leagues with the biggest backlog, the Northern League, announce that the FA have given them a short extension to their season after being told there was no scope for extensions. And they're now going to complete their playoffs by May the 11th instead of the previous May the 6th deadline. Interestingly, they've also been given dispensation, they've announced, to allow fixtures to be reversed if the away club can host a game the intended home club can't. The only league, as far as I'm aware, as we're talking, that have been granted that dispensation. So it'd be interesting to see whether some of the other clubs, some of the other leagues who have similar fixture backlogs are going to be affected by that. You mentioned about the South West being one of the worst affected parts of the country in terms of postponements. And the situation won't have been helped by the news that after many years of great support, Toolstation will not be renewing their sponsorship of the Western League. A big hit in times when sponsorship is already tough and difficult to organise, particularly when a partnership's been so strong and going for so long. I think people overlook the importance of a main sponsor, which just helps some of the burden of the masses of administration to run a league. Maybe it helps pay for some part-time or full-time staff rather than relying on volunteers. It will have a big impact on football in the southwest.
Yes, very much. I mean, Toolstation are one of those companies who have been great supporters of non-league over the years. Obviously, there's the Western League. I think they also sponsor the Northern Counties League as well, isn't it? Mm. So you know they've been staunch support and of football at this level for a long time. And non-league football needs people like Toolstation. Obviously, we at the non-league paper are absolutely no different at all. You know, we couldn't do anything without our sponsors, and we're really, really grateful to be linked in with the likes of us who have come in. Obviously, they're the FA Trophy and the FA Vars sponsors, and we got our National Game Awards coming up next month, and we've already. We're so grateful to be, you know, to have sponsors in place to help us do that, and it's the same right across the board. There's sponsors who go above and beyond the call of duty to support non-league football in their region, and to see a big sponsor like that pull out is a bit of a bitter blow. Hopefully there'll be another one waiting in the wings, ready to do what Toolstation have done and help support grassroots football, because it really, really needs it. And hopefully there's a firm out there, sort of, as I say, that could jump in and fill that void. It's it really, really doesn't. It really, really does require it. And please, any firm that wants to put a hand in their pocket and help support non-league football, please don't hesitate.
And I think Toolstation were probably
hugely valuable.
Yeah, it's probably put their name on the lips of many people it wouldn't have done before. So it's obviously it's had the desired effect, I think, in terms of marketing. So hopefully that will encourage other people to step forward. A quick roundup on the managerial merry-go-round hasn't slowed down. We mentioned David Noble departing at Wealdstone. We've seen Steve Smith announcing he's going to step down from the dugout at least at the end of the season. Bishop Stortford, Steve Tynan, also one of those that's stepping down at the end of the season at Harwich. Speaking to managers, I do think that the juggle with modern life and being a part-time manager at part-time clubs is getting harder and harder. I don't know how that's going to affect non-league in the coming seasons. Elsewhere, we saw Danny Caldicott resigned at Clitheroe. Steve Watt is out at Hightown. I think 7 defeats in a row and 16 conceding 3 games probably sealed his fate there. But a big surprise coming at Wharton and Hersham, with them just outside the playoffs, still in contention, I think, for the Southern League Premier South playoffs. Some debate as to who jumped first, but Scott Harris is no longer in charge there, having taken the club from step 6 to, as I say, well, knocking on the door of step 2.
Yeah, this is a funny one, wasn't it? I mean, Scott's someone I know well. He's done an absolutely tremendous job there. As I say, step 6 into step 3. They've won defeat in 6. They're 5 points off, 5 points off the playoffs after an amazing season in the Premier South, and he gets to put it on Monday, or so we're led to believe. A statement comes out from the Wharton and Hersham owners. This is a consortium of 24-year-olds who've done an excellent job in turning the club's fortunes around. It has to be said. The statement come out, and it was a very strangely worded statement, basically waxing lyrical about Scott's time at the club, but didn't actually explain why he was leaving. Obviously, that came with come in more criticism, and then we get a second statement which revealed a little bit more. Scott, someone led to believe now, actually offered to resign earlier in the season. He was persuaded against it, and then a recent review of club matters from the board led them to decide that they were going to part ways with Scott at the end of the season. Scott obviously wasn't happy with that and has now quit. Now I've been in touch with Scott. I asked if he wanted to talk this week about that decision. He's declined at the moment. He wants time to heal, but he's adamant that he was actually fired, and there was. So there's obviously two sides to every story. We don't know what goes on behind closed doors, but it seems a bit of an odd one to me. I mean, what a job he's done in taking a club literally from the depths of sort of there, really. I mean, this is a very, very famous club over the years who lost their way, ended up back in step six, where she should never really have been, and Scott Harris has been tremendous in hoisting it back up to the verge really of step two. Where the club goes here, who knows? It'll be interesting. They've obviously got a plan in place, and I mean this is a sleeping giant. This is the club that can yet go further. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see where they turn from here. But disappointing decision. Obviously, another one was Steve Smith at Bishop Stortford that you mentioned. Obviously, really feel for Steve. He had the decision to move Bishop Stortford into National League North after their promotion from the Eastman last year was always a big wrench on the club, and obviously it proved a little bit too much. They had an absolute a long, grueling season, as we say, in National League North, and it proved, say, a little bit too much for them. But unfortunately, Steve has decided to call it a day. I think he needs a long rest after a season like that, which is a shame, because the club's been completely derailed. Whether the geographical sort of notions really of football at that level didn't really shine down on them, did they really? But it's one of those things, and Bishop Stortford hopefully will come back stronger. And possibly, maybe even in National League South in a couple of years' time. Who knows?
Who knows? Well, weather permitting, plenty of league action. Likely some more champions, and maybe some more relegation devastation. And that FA Vars semi-final report. What else can we expect in this weekend's non-league paper?
Yeah, we're really, really tight space at the moment, which is just the way of the world, really. At this time of year, everyone wants to buy the cherry, which is great. Talking about champions, we're going to try and cover over the next few weeks as many step five and six champions as we can, to sort of give everyone their spot. Obviously, we spoke to players that Solly Howard Gates said to. For our first trophy preview, we got a nice column from Mark Harris, the chairman of the Northern Premier League, as to sort of why it's not always easy to extend the season. Sort of just expanding on our debate from earlier. So there's plenty of that. We've got loads of letters in from you guys who are some of which not happy about probably the rain really more than anything. But there's plenty there, and we're looking forward to another busy weekend. Obviously, headlined by the Vars semi-final, and top and bottom end of the National League. Should be good. Yeah, really looking forward to it.
Looking forward to it as well. A non-league paper on Sunday morning. John Couch, thanks for your help. I'll speak to you again soon.
Thank you.
And that then is it for this week. Before I go, a number of champions and relegation candidates already known, of course, dependent on those latter on the AGM Cup, which I'm sure is going to be very exciting for some this season. We'll round those up another time, but congratulations must go out to all those already with their hands on the titles. Interestingly, we already know the winners of five of the top seven divisions in the non-league pyramid as we speak. And, the other two may well be confirmed by the next time we record this show, if not before you even listen to this episode. So, an exciting season for many. Congratulations to all those who are champions. Don't forget, you can get involved on social media at Non-League Show. Myself there at Tim Fuel, F-U-E-L-L. You can find us every week on Audio Boom and on Apple Podcasts. Also, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Deezer, TuneIn Radio, CastBox, iHeart, Geo7, Listen Notes, Overcast, Podcast Addict, Podchaser, Radio Republic via your smart speakers, and all good podcast aggregation sites. Stay safe, enjoy your football. Thank you, and goodbye.